Well, the weather is fine, and Dr. Kritsky and I will soon be walking through the city park, but I'd like to point out some things about Doc. He's authored or edited 10 books, 260 papers on subjects as diverse as entomology, Egyptology, evolution, history of science, dinosaur biology, insect poetry, and insect mythology. I know that he's currently in the midst of another book. Dr. Kritsky is well qualified for this walk in the park. We will be talking about the periodical cicada. Let's get underway. Take me out to the city park and introduce me to the cicada. We're surrounded by the noise of cicadas, and we can see them everywhere. Show me around.
Certainly. You'll notice that the singing, the intensity of the sound, will get really loud and then sort of die down a little bit, then get loud again and die down a little bit. And that singing is a mating call that the males produce to attract a female. Males gather in trees in what we call chorusing centers, and they start singing. The females don't sing. They don't have the sound-producing apparatus, but they will respond. They respond by flicking their wings at a precise moment in the call. So a male sings, and if a female's nearby, she flicks her wings, he hears that, turns towards her, she flicks her wings, and so on. If you're a male and you're singing and no females have flicked their wings to attract your attention, you stop singing and you fly to another tree. And so when that sound level starts to drop down a little bit, you'll also see all these cicadas flying out of the tree, because this is like a giant cicada's singles bar. If a male is unsuccessful at attracting a female after two or three calls, he goes and tries the tree over there. As we walk around this park, you're going to hear this loud getting a lot crescendo and then dropping off and getting louder and dropping off. And so that's your sense of hearing is going to detect this as soon as we walk into the park.
But as we got out of the asphalt parking lot, stepped into the park, we dipped under these willow branches, it seems to me that these songs aren't the same. Off to the right here, over there by that fountain, I'm hearing different cicadas over here where we're standing.
It turns out there are three species of 17-year cicadas, four species of 13-year cicadas, but the three species groups each have a very distinct call. And so if you're hearing this, something's referred to as the pharaoh cicada, it's a high-pitched sort of as an individual, but when they're all together, it sounds like a 1950s sci-fi movie, this high-pitched whine that never stops. That's Magus cicada septendecim, if you're looking at 17-year cicadas, which is brood 13, which is emerging in Wisconsin, in southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois this year. And nearby, Magus cicada cassini, and that makes a much more click buzz sound. When there's a whole group of them together, it's not going to sound at all like that high-pitched, hollow sound like of a 1950 B movie, science fiction movie, but it's going to be more like a shh, like a hamburger hitting a hot frying pan with oil.
That's precisely the noise that has just developed out. I'm turned around, looking back at the car. I don't know where these cicadas are. They're invisible to me, but that's the sound that's just now being generated.
And if you wanted to try to find them, it's not necessarily difficult. You'll see them fly as that sound level drops. You'll see them start flying. Periodical cicadas, all you have to do is walk under that tree and you will see them. They're there. They're about an inch and a half in length. That's the cassini, the one that sounds like the frying hamburger. It's got red eyes, a black body, and wing veins are tinged with orange. And their whole survival strategy is not to be hidden from view, but to be seen. They overwhelm their predators by having so many of these cicadas emerge at once that the predators start eating them. And eventually, these opportunistic predators will get tired of eating the cicadas. I can give you an analogy. Just imagine if you walked outside and you found the world filled with flying Hershey's Kisses. I know I'd want to eat some Hershey's Kisses.
Now you're distracting me, Dr. Kritsky. Let's get to the bugs.
Well, but the point is, after you eat a bunch of Hershey's Kisses, you're going to get tired of eating kisses. And that's what the cicadas are relying on. They come out in these big numbers to satiate their predators, and there are still millions of cicadas left to sing, mate, lay eggs, reproduce.
Okay, I see one of these with the red eye. And which species is this?
There are three different species that look very much the same from the, looking at the top of the insect. They've got red eyes and black bodies and these orange-tinged wings. To really tell which species it is, you've got to look a little more carefully. So there's one that's a little bit bigger, about a quarter inch larger. That's Septindecim. And you'll see an orange patch that is right by the eye and it goes to the wing base. And if you turn them over, you're going to see that the underside of the abdomen is going to be a series of orange stripes along the margin of the abdominal segments, then a black section. So you'll see this, this sort of striped sign, and they're going to be relatively thick. If you see another one, it's going to not have the, slightly smaller without that orange patch by the eye. Turn it over, the underside is going to be entirely black. That's Cassinine.
Okay.
Then there's a third species. It's relatively rare. It's only probably 5% of those that come out. And it's going to be the same size as Cassinine, small. Turn it over. It's going to have along the very edge of the abdominal segments a very thin orange line. That's the one that you're not likely to find, but you will find them if you start looking at lots of them. But all three species are synchronized. They all emerge from the ground at the same time. And what the trigger for that is soil temperature.
Hold on. I just saw two children run with fright to their mother when they heard this cacophony. Should children be afraid of cicada?
No, they don't. They shouldn't. They don't bite. They don't sting. They don't carry disease. In fact, if you've got kids and this is going on, take them outside. Introduce them to cicadas. Like having David Attenborough in your backyard or in this park with a whole nature thing going on, that if you want to really get them into real interest, you can look and you'll find along the tree trunks, you're going to find these empty husks, the cicada shells for the nymphs that have crawled out of the ground and then transported. Those will be sitting around on the trunks of trees. They'll collect at the base of trees, so on. So there's a lot of natural history going on here.
Will I find them at those lilac bushes?
You won't necessarily find them singing. They'll land. They're clumsy flyers. You'll find some landing on them. But their primary place to be is going to be in a tree, because they lay their eggs in the terminal eggs of tree branch, and right where the new leaves are coming out. That's where the female will oviposit her eggs.
You mentioned something about the insect living below the sod, and the temperature has to achieve a certain point for the cicada nymph to surface. What is going on below the sod? I think you told me that we're now looking at a brood of 17-year-old cicadas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the eggs that produce the cicadas that are emerging this year were laid 17 years ago in 2007. So what's been going on for the past nearly 17? Well, the egg hatches in the tree. The cicadas crawl out of where the eggs were laid in the little egg nest. They literally drop to the soil. And it's very important they do this quickly, because ants and beetles and spiders would go after these things with a vengeance. I've actually observed this. I've set up a hatching station and actually collected newly hatched cicada nymphs. And I've taken them outside and under a maple tree that I have in my property that has cicada egg nests from previous years that are healed and what have you. And I just dump them on the soil, and within a minute, all of them are gone. And most of them are gone within 30 seconds or so, because they need to get underground quickly before any insect predator can find them. And once they get underground, they're going to feed on grass roots for a few weeks. And by New Year's Day, they'll be between 8 to 12 inches below the surface, sucking on a tree root. And that's where they're going to be for the next 17 years. Tunneling from along the route. If they go the wrong way and miss the route, they can start.
I know in nature it's important for the nymph to arrive at the right place in the right way. I once saw some praying mantises not doing that. They all kind of clustered and dropped in one place, so they were cannibalizing each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that these nymph cicadas aren't able to cannibalize each other.
That's correct. They have sucking mouthparts, so they can't chew up their compatriots. Fluid feed. So they, while underground, they're sticking their mouthparts into the tree roots, feeding on xylem tissue. The xylem is the one of the vascular tissues in trees that conducts water from the roots up to the leaf, and that's their primary food source. When they come out as adults, they do need to stay hydrated, and you can find them just puncturing the bark, of getting that little bit of moisture below the surface of the bark, keep themselves hydrated.
Is there any problem with trees as Mother Earth gets more and more ill in terms of droughts and temperatures? Does that have any effect on the quality, the health of the tree, and quality of the health of the nymph?
Depends on the tree species. As things get warmer, a lot of our northern adapt species are not doing well. When I started at Mount St. Joe in 1983, we had a beautiful cluster of Austrian pines that have since become very stressed as the temperatures got warmer and they were taken down. After all, the tree adapted to living in the highlands of Austria was not doing well on a mowed lawn in the southern Cincinnati. So they were under stress from that, but not from the cicadas. What the increasing temperature is doing for the cicadas is it's causing them to emerge earlier in the spring than they used to. Case in point, some of my research going back to try to find evidence of the very first day they came out in big, big numbers, and then correlating that with weather information. About before 1940, the average date for cicadas to emerge from the ground was around the 28th, 29th of May. Now they're emerging between the 12th and the 15th of May. And indeed, in 2021, just across the Ohio River from where I'm sitting, we had cicadas emerging on April 27th. They're emerging earlier in the year than they used to.
That seems like it would have the implication of a profound challenge to the cicadas.
No, it shouldn't. The trees, they've been leafed out. They're still, you know, we're talking about May into June. And if you come out in early May, that's really not much different than coming out in late May, back as they were doing back before 1940. The trees are still there. The eggs were laid. The eggs hatched 6 to 8 weeks later. So it's all timed on that critical 64 degree Fahrenheit soil temperature around the tree. And I actually, and students of mine, we did experiments on this. We found trees on south-facing slopes. We had temperature probes on the south side of the tree and on the north side of the tree. And the cicadas started coming out exactly at 64 degrees Fahrenheit on the south side. But on the north facing, the north side of that tree, it was over about 4 or 5 days later they started to come. The full emergence takes about 2 weeks for all the cicadas to come out in a given area. But it depends on the exposure of the tree, how warm that grass is, that soil is going to be just under on that sun-facing versus a north-facing slope.
The nymph that is finally after, let's say, sometime in December, inches. So he's going 6 to 8 inches down.
Yep.
After the eggs dropped.
Right. But sometime in late fall, it's burrowing down to be between 8 to 12 inches below the surface. And it stays there for like 4 or 5 years. And as they mature underground, they get closer to the surface. For the last 5, 6 years before they emerge, they're probably between 4 and 8 inches below the surface.
Do they all come up within just a week or so of each other, these millions and millions and millions of cicadas?
It takes about two full weeks. And in many cases, you'll see before the first big emergence. But when they really start coming out, they come out several days in a row, hundreds to thousands over the course of that first. The heaviest I've measured was 356 per square yard.
And how do you measure that?
Well, when they crawl out of the ground, holes in the ground about the diameter of your pinky. If you've got a lot of clay in your soil, or even just enough clay in your soil, those holes persist, and they'll persist in some cases as far as, I've seen it as late as December. So I would go out with quadrants, plop it down at random. To make sure I didn't count the hole twice, I would stick a white plastic spoon down each one of the holes till all the holes were filled. Then I collect the spoons and you count the spoons. And that tells you how many cicada holes there were in that little square yard. And you go around and do that several places and get an average. If there's a golf course, a tree-lined golf course, they can be emerging in the woods, but they're not going to be emerging in the middle of the fairway. So when you talk about this 1.5 billion per acre, that's acreage under trees in which cicadas have laid their eggs.
This particular year, we're looking for a massive, not seen since early 1800s, massive emergence. So what would be your estimate on an acre with an extremely high cicada count?
It's going to still be the same. It turns out the overlap zone is very, very small, and it's not going to be easy to tell if you're in it or not. There's one species of 13-year cicada that's unique to the 13-year cicada, so you can tell that is a 13-year area you're visiting. But it's going to be awfully difficult to figure out, is this also where the 17-year cicadas are coming out? And given the, it's not that it's going to be this cicada Armageddon or something like that with massive, massive numbers, in part because deforestation for agriculture and deforestation for urban development have dramatically reduced the population of cicadas to the point where they're much more fragmented. And even though I've seen evidence that indeed the two broods, brood 13, the 17-year cicada, and brood 19, the 13-year cicada, I've actually seen evidence that indeed they've been on the same tree, albeit they came out at different years. We were able to go back and find their egg scars. That area of overlap is not going to be very large, and there's been so much development in these areas that I'm not expecting this thing to have like 3 million cicadas. I think that's what some of the things that the media is sort of getting people. I get probably an email every day or so now, people wanting to know, where will I see the most cicadas? And the numbers will probably not be, they're not going to be double, because we're looking at the limits of each brood's distribution, and those could be relatively much be smaller than you'd find in the middle of where it's really intense numbers that occurred in the past. I fully expect that we're going to see cicadas in the overlap zone, but people may be disappointed that it won't be this 120 decibel experience. They'll probably be the same intensity, because at the edge of their distribution, the numbers aren't going to be as great. You know, they don't just sort of drop. As you get more towards the end, you'll see patches of cicadas here and there spreading out, what have you. I don't expect the overlap zone as exciting as people would like it to be.
Please take me through the life of the cicada from once steps out of the shell.
What's coming out of the shell is an adult cicada. It's tenoral, sometimes referred to as a tenoral adult, because it hasn't completely hardened its exoskeleton. So we
how
can start
long, how long does that take?
Once you see them on your tree, it takes about 90 minutes for the insect to completely get out of the shell, and another 90 minutes or so for it to turn black. And then it still takes, they climb to the top of the trees, and it takes 4 or 5 days for them to continue hardening before they start singing and flying around in numbers.
And there is no predator that likes to snack on the cicada, right?
Oh, everything wants to snack on cicadas. That's their whole survival strategy. Periodical cicadas they're manna to opportunistic predators. All sorts of bird species feed on them. Dogs, cats, raccoons, mice, chipmunks, snakes, turtles. I've seen owls on the ground during the day hopping around picking up cicadas. So, indeed, there's now circumstantial evidence, but also evidence, some fieldwork evidence, that indeed this wonderful food source that comes out in May of the year has been beneficial for some species to actually have more of their young survive because there's a greater food source. And then the next year, because they're not cicadas, that'll be a little more difficult times.
Just an amazing story. So we've got the cicada. It's come out of the shell. It's going to take a while to dry off. The wings are so large. What's the story of the wing development? And is the cicada able to use the wing just soon after coming out of the shell?
When they come out of your exoskeleton, exuvia, their wings are all shriveled and they free themselves. They pump fluid through the wings. That expands them to their normal tent-like appearance over the abdomen. But they're still very white. They're very floppy. It's almost like a wet paper towel. Now, as they start to harden their exoskeleton, they're also hardening the wing veins, and that takes another 90 minutes or so for them to look like a regular cicada, adult cicada. But then they tend to climb to the tops of the trees, and they sit there for the next 4 or 5 days, continuing that hardening of the exoskeleton, and then they start flying. And those early ones that fly, it's not once in a while. I'd see a blue jay snapping one up in the air. As I say, they're clumsy flyers. So you see birds picking them off as they're flying, chipmunks picking them up on the trunks of trees and on the branches. It's an opportunistic feast.
Flight, I do now remember when I'd see sparrows, and it was so fascinating to see how they would close the distance and make the movements to stay on track with the insect, bring it down to the sidewalk, and then after a while I'd go over and see, I think basically the wings and the legs were about the only thing left on the sidewalk. No cannibals in the story. I want a story that's exciting. Tell me about cicada sex.
Well, of course, the whole purpose of all life is to reproduce. And the adults only last about a month after they emerge. And because there's a 2-week time period for all the cicadas to come out, once the cicadas, they start emerging to when they totally disappear, it's about a 6-week period. After they've matured in the trees a little bit, they'll start singing. That occurs about 5 days after they emerge from the ground. They gather in trees, and the males sing to attract female. The cicada male for Septendaceae has a three-part mating call. He's got a call which is very precise. It has an ending and a start, and it also has a tone difference. So it starts out, and I'll use the term that we describe that sounds like pharaoh at that O, where the tone starts to drop. That's when the female will flick her wings if she hears it and is interested. He'll sing again, she'll flick her wings. He'll move closer, sing again, she'll flick her wings. As he gets even closer, he'll go into another call that doesn't have the break. It'd be pharaoh, pharaoh, pharaoh. If she hasn't flown away, he starts tapping her on her thorax as he begins to start the process of physical copulation. And then there's a third call that's more like almost rhythmic call like that that's going on at that process. They can stay in copula for several minutes. Maybe even over an hour. And then I can tell you that observations have suggested that 85% of the cicada males will mate only once, 10% will mate twice, and 5% will mate 3 times. After the male has exhausted his sperm complement, he will die a day or so, a few days later. The female, now having been inseminated, she will start laying her eggs, not instantaneously, but a short time afterwards. And she tries to find what's going to be an attractive tree to a female cicada. It's going to be a tree in full sunlight because she's looking for a place that's going to have a tree that's mature enough to survive for 17 years, surrounded by low vegetation because the nymphs have to feed on those grass. And that's our backyards. That's our parks, our cemeteries. So that's what we're finding. Those areas are very helpful for looking for Pyrenaical Cicadas. We'll start laying her eggs by using an egg-laying structure called an ovipositor. And it's a little, like a little saw blade, dual saw blades that move along a central shaft that you can literally saw into the terminal ends of a tree. And once she's sawed in, her ovipositor will deposit pairs of eggs along the so quarter inch stretch that she sawed in. And she will continue doing that until either she runs out of twig, and in that case she flies and finds another branch, or she runs out of eggs. She will have on average around 500 eggs, and once she's exhausted her supply of eggs, then she's ready to die as well. And the eggs will stay in the tree branches for 6 to 8 weeks before they start hatching, and that's going to be usually in the, depending on when they laid the eggs. If the eggs were laid, let's say at the end of June, the egg hatching should start somewhere in late July, early August. If they were laid earlier in May, these eggs will start hatching in the middle of July. Once they hatch, they immediately fall to the ground. They get underground very quickly, and they probably don't move more than a meter or so over the next 16-17 years underground. They're not sleeping. They're not hibernating. They're sucking on a tree root. In many cases, they're in areas that they can be below the frost line, and just, you know, slowly growing. And the temperature down there is around 56 degrees. It stays relatively constant over the course of the seasons. And then after 17 years have passed, that's when the immature will emerge again. Their eyes develop the red coloration in the fall, the year before they emerge. And right a few days before they actually physically emerge in their 17th year, they develop these two black patches behind the head. People working in their gardens, for example, if they're digging their gardens, they run across cicada nymphs, and they have red eyes but no black patches. That means they're not ready to come out yet. If they find those black patches behind the head, you'll expect to see them. They would have been coming out in the next couple days. Then the process begins again. The nymph climbs the tree, sheds the skin. The white adult pulls out, expands its wings, turns dark, climbs the top of the trees. The thing that's different is that we're going to be 17 years older when we see this again.
Right.
And some of my former students or whatever that are in class say, well, when they came out 17 years ago, there were lost so many of them, and now it doesn't seem like it's heavy. Well, it's probably just as heavy, but they're bigger. So it's not going to be the same experience of these big bugs. Those bugs are going to seem a little smaller simply because you've gotten so much bigger.
What happens with the cicada nymph as it's coming up towards the sod, and in 17 years the surface has been changed, the parking lot is there or whatever? Is there any way for these cicadas to survive?
Well, cicadas will only survive as long as there's a tree with roots that it can suck. If that tree dies, the cicadas are going to die. If it's the middle, let's say, of a massive parking lot, if you culled all the trees and put down a parking lot, those cicadas are going to die. But let's say somebody's decided to put a porch off the back of the house, and they were, let's say there was a tree nearby, and the cicadas were sucking on roots that is eventually now under this concrete slab. They will dig up to the reach the bottom of the slab, and then they go left or right and to tunnel along the underside of that slab, and then emerge along the edges nearby, because there were trees nearby that had been taken out, but there were it was late enough in their cycle that they were able to feed, you know, they found roots of some of the bushes that, it's very precarious. If you look at the number of eggs laid below a cicada tree, compare that to the number of eggs probably produced 17 years earlier. Being an immature cicada underground is pretty dangerous for that nymph.
Looking at the globe, I know there are cicadas, I think, on all the continents. Is that true?
I don't believe there are any on Antarctica, but yes, there are 3,400 species worldwide, but there are only 7 periodical cicadas that we have here in the eastern United States. And they are endemic to the United States. They're as unique to the eastern U.S. deciduous forests as giraffes are to Africa.
Wow. So no doubt we get scholars coming into the United States this time of year.
Oh, yes. I've already had calls from colleagues from England, Australia, and Japan. And there's not very many of us that work on periodical cicadas, so we usually get together and hang out and talk cicadas. And for those of you here in the States, I run across my colleagues probably 12 out of every 17 years on the average, because there are 12 17-year cicada broods, and those broods come out in different years. Now, there are 3 13-year cicada broods, and that's what's happening this year. is a 13-year cicada brood. Brood 19 is emerging simultaneously with the 17-year cicada brood 13. And the last time these two particular broods came out together was 1803. That's when Thomas Jefferson was president. And why 221? That's the product of 17 times 13.
That's interesting. And that's that prime number issue that I was repeatedly seeing in my reading.
Right. And the fact that there are 12 17-year broods and 3 13-year broods, these dual emergences happen, they're not overly common, but they do happen. They happen oftentimes. So, for example, brood 22 happened in Ohio and Kentucky when a brood 14 emerged in 2023, and then 13 years later, brood 10 emerged, and they emerged along with brood 10. So those are two examples. I visited a dual emergence back in 98. There was another one in 2014, and so on. So it can happen upwards of 30 times or so every 220 years. But the last time these two particular broods emerged together was 1803.
Does a brood always include 3 different species?
For the 17-year cicadas, usually there are a couple of broods that only have 2 of the 3 species. And the same can be said for the 13-year species. There's 4 species, but there's 2 in what we call the decim group. That the fourth species there only occurs in some of the western 13-year broods, not the ones that emerge further east. So there is some variation in that regard.
Do the species accidentally crossbreed? Is there any biology that prevents that?
Yes, there is. They each have different calls. So if you'll find the decim calls attract other decim, the Cassini call attracts decim, and Cassini, and the decula species attract only decula females. There are some instances, and we know this possibly happened in the past because of a shift, there are 2 decim species in the western 13-year cicada broods, and one of the two looks very much like a 17-year decim. The call is very similar as well. The 2 calls between each of those 2 decims that come out in 13-year cicadas are slightly different pitches. And so the mating call is the isolating mechanism for them to identify, that's a different species than this one. There have been attempts to cross cicadas in captivity, and that has happened and has been observed, but that doesn't negate it because you're forcing a situation that doesn't necessarily occur in nature.
Now, the cicada comes out of the ground, and it's got a burrow, and in this whole cycle of life with the cicada, what is the number one contribution made to the health of the planet by the cicada?
Well, periodical cicadas are unique to the eastern deciduous forest, and they do a lot of good for the eastern deciduous forest. So let's start from the beginning when the nymphs are coming out of the ground. The holes that the nymphs produce as they emerge from the ground, it's like a natural aeration. And, you know, during the summer months, it gets really hot, and if there's some clay in the soil, that ground gets really hard. And so when it rains, during heavy summer rains, a lot of that rainwater will run off. If you're a tree that's had a lot of cicadas emerge, you have these holes there, that water, instead of running off, a lot of that water goes down those holes and helps water the tree. The adults, when the adults come out, as I mentioned earlier, these adults are food for all sorts of predators. And that can be a nutrient boom for some of these cicadas, allowing them more of their offspring to survive. When the female lays her eggs in the trees, and sometimes that egg laying can damage the twig to the point where it literally breaks and sort of dangles from the edge from that branch, and the leaves wither and turn brown. We call that flagging. That can hurt a really young small sapling. But in many cases, that's like a natural pruning, resulting in a greater flower set the next year. There was a paper published in the late 19th century titled "Out of Evil Cometh Good." It was about cherry farmers talking about how the production of cherries the year following a cicada emergence was greater than they expected. And so that's the benefit. When the cicada's life cycle is done, they die, and the dead carcasses of these cicadas collect at the base of trees, and boy, do they stink. It's a scent memory you'll never forget. But as they start to decay, the nutrients for the cicada bodies go down into the soil around the tree and create a nutrient cache for the cicadas and the trees. There are parts of the eastern U.S. deciduous forest that don't have any periodical cicadas at all, and they're doing well. So if the cicadas went extinct tomorrow, the forest are not going to disappear. But while they're here, They do a lot of good for the forest and the deciduous ecosystem.
Does a cicada have a pest that it spreads, promulgates? Is there any disease that a cicada can carry around?
Yes, but not for humans. They have a fungal disease, which changes their behavior. The cicadas have a fungal disease, which can modify their behavior. it actually turns a male who gets infected with this fungal disease, and this fungus actually fills up the abdomen, and the abdomen sometimes breaks off, and that allows the fungal spores to spread. But if a male is infected and he hears another male call, he doesn't call, he flicks his wings to pretend he's a female. As the calling male gets closer, the physical contact may be involved with spreading the disease.
Is there a biological preference or a reason for that spreading the disease?
Well, it's adaptive for the fungus. And, you know, all life wants to reproduce. And so if you're a fungus, whether you're disease-causing or not, how do you make sure you're reproducing? Well, one of the ways you can do is infect a cicada. If the abdomen has fallen off and this cicada is still able to fly, it's dumping spores all over the place. If it comes in contact with another cicada, it can spread, causing infection. From the fungus's perspective, it's a good thing. Not necessarily from the cicada's perspective. And my last census from 2021, about a third of the cicadas towards the end of the emergence that were still around were showing signs of fungal infection. The population is so large that many millions of cicadas have now already laid their eggs. That's going to be fine. So it's not going to wipe out the cicada. There is some circumstantial evidence from Monty Lloyd's work. He was a great cicada specialist of the late 20th century. There was a brood 4 which occurs in the Kansas area. It was one of the largest cicada emergences he'd ever measured. He measured close to nearly 1,000 emergence holes per square meter. But when he went back 17 years later to those locations, they weren't there. They get wiped out. Well, he thinks that a lot of these times, some of these populations where there's numbers like this, there'll be a shift that some of the cicadas will come out 4 years early. And that may be a benefit to get out of sync with the fungus. The annual cicadas, which they emerge in July and August and September, after the periodical cicadas are gone, they do have a predator that's specialized to take advantage of their population. It's called the cicada killer wasp. And they start emerging in the middle of July, early to the middle of July. In most of the areas, the periodical cicadas are done and gone dead by the end of June. In 2021, I heard one lonely male cicada call on the 2nd of July. That was the last one I heard by survey.
I do think we should mention something about the cicada killer wasp, because it is, in fact, a wasp. It is, to my eyes, a frightening insect, and it lives in the ground. And I've had to deal with them in a lawnmower. So let's inform the listeners about this insect.
Sure. Well, the cicada killer wasp, and I'm not sure what wasps you found when you were mowing your grass. Most times those might be yellow jackets. You really got to get it into its face for it to sting. It will sting. And what they do is they provision their egg nest with paralyzed cicadas. They fly out, they find an annual cicada. And these are these green, black, tan cicadas that are cryptically colored living in our trees. Their calls start in the middle of July. That's more like a bzzz, 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 bzzz. And I've observed cicada killer wasps dragging cicadas around. When I was more actively playing golf, I used to get free rounds of golf by helping golf courses rid their sand traps of cicada killer wasps, because they love that. They like to nest in loose sand, and they burrow down with their paralyzed cicada, adult cicada, lay an egg on it, and then bury it and go on and try to find another one. Now, there were some instances in the 19th century where people claimed they were stung by cicadas. And all those have been studied at the time, and it all turned out they were people seeing cicadas in July and August were being stung by cicada killer wasps.
I do have one question with the ovipositor, the tool the female uses to open up mm-hmm. the twig and then lay mm-hmm. the eggs. Is that a common tool in the insect world? Is there anything unique about the cicada ovipositor?
Well, the ovipositors are not unique to cicadas. We find a number of wasps have ovipositors. In fact, the sting of a wasp and a bee is a modified ovipositor. So they're common to many of the insects. The periodical cicada ovipositor is really kind of interesting. I've done some studies with my colleague Matt Leonard at Kent State University at the Stark campus. We collected cicada females from all three species of 17-year cicadas. We analyzed the molecular structure and found that the ovipositor was impregnated with metals such as zinc and manganese. This is not unusual for cicadas. We find, so for example, the ovipositors of ichneumonid wasps that lay their eggs under the bark of trees also have metals. We find some of the beetles that are able to chew into bark and what have you, their mandibles are impregnated with metal. We were able to determine that the cicada ovipositor had this metal, and it was concentrated along the serrated tip. So as it's sawing into the branch, that was used, that metal was helping to reinforce that egg-laying structure of the ovipositor to successfully lay eggs.
That, I think, is the most interesting thing I've ever heard about an insect. Was that an accidental discovery, or was there a reason to think that that was going to be?
Well, I'd read a paper several years ago about the molecular structure of wasp ovipositors, and noting the similarities that they're laying their eggs under the bark trees, I suggested to Dr. Leonard, this is something we should look into. I wasn't surprised to find it, but I was very pleased that similar adaptation was seen in the cicadas.
Okay, let's look back at this conversation, and is there anything that this skipped? Do we miss anything that's really important in terms
yes,
of...
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
Okay. Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. Well, the one thing that's important about the cicadas is it's totally impractical for one person to be able to map all the distribution. And that's part of the reason why, working with the Center for IT Engagement at Mount St. Joseph University, we developed the free app Cicada Safari. And I would ask your listeners, especially if they're living in areas where the cicadas are emerging this year, either in the southern states where brood 19 is emerging, or in Wisconsin, northern Illinois, and northeastern Iowa, or northwestern Indiana, to download Cicada Safari. We asked for the email because many times in the past, we've got photographs of periodical cicadas emerging where we didn't expect them to emerge. I'll email the user and ask questions about the location, is this certainly where it came from, that type of a thing. And in 2021 with Brood 10, we had 200,000 downloads, and we received and verified over 561,000 photographs of being a periodical cicada, and it resulted in probably some of the most detailed mapping we've ever done. Prior to 2021, we mapped out Brood 9, which is a small, concise brood in southern West Virginia and northwestern North Carolina and western Virginia. But what happened with that app, not only did they emerge where we thought cicadas would emerge, but we found cicadas emerging off cycle. And so in addition to Brood 9 emerging, we had a 4-year acceleration of Brood 10, a 4-year acceleration of Brood 19. We had some Brood 5 cicadas. We had 1-year early Brood 10 cicadas. It blew our mind. My colleagues and I would always go to the region where we knew the cicadas were emerging. No one ever thought about looking, let's look 500 miles away. And so in 2022, no cicadas were expected. So we decided to refit Cicada Safari to look for cicadas when they weren't supposed to show up. We had over 400 people reporting isolated cicadas emerging a year late. Last year, we had about 700 people reporting, and we verified it with the photographs that cicadas were emerging off cycle, also in Brood 13 areas, Brood 19 areas, and so on. So these stragglers are not surprising, but I was surprised at how many stragglers from different broods and different, you know, 4 years early, 4 years late, 1 year early, 1 year late, so on, were coming out, in some cases 2 years late. There's a lot going on there. And the benefit of Cicada Safari is it's so easy to use, and go out and look for cicadas. If you see one, you take its photograph, and there's a little diagram of an airplane at the bottom. Hit that, and automatically sends that to our server, and that is looked at and verified if it's a periodical cicada. And if it is, it goes onto a live map. So anybody for the interested in seeing where their cicadas are emerging this year with brood, this dual emergence, you can every day, as more and more cicadas are being reported and verified, that map goes live. And you can see where you could go and see it yourself. It's been a real benefit, the efforts of mapping. It may seem like, okay, we had a map. But you know what? Back in 2001, cicadas emerged in northern Kentucky when they weren't supposed to. And by verifying the distribution of what was going on, and the help of a lot of emails from people, I discovered a brood of 13-year cicadas in northern Kentucky and southwest Ohio that had never been verified before because nobody ever looked. So there's still a lot of fundamental knowledge out there to get. And with people's help and a lot of cicada photos, we can solve more problems.
That's a perfect segue into how it's been used for the medical and other things.
Oh, certainly. The success of Cicada Safari was so great that we got written up in Science Magazine, MIT Technology Review. I had interviews with stations in England, France, Portugal, Spain. I was even interviewed by Channel 1 of Russia about this app. And our success with this app provided the university and the Center for IT Engagement with the confidence to start expanding and spinning off new products. We received a grant from the state of Ohio to reduce infant mortality in southwest Ohio. And it uses a lot of that fundamental information that we and mechanisms that we use in Cicada Safari. So that's now been deployed. We are also creating apps now using artificial intelligence to develop apps to improve student success at the university. We've now taken over the web technology and what have you, and emails of a nursing home. We have helped scientific societies redo their websites. We've been working with land trust organizations to improve their outreach with new websites. Because in today's world, your website is like having a new building. The people see how successful you are. You know, if you look, it makes you look more professional and what have you. And so we've been working a lot with a number of 501c3 nonprofit corporations to help them meet their mission and their goals. And at the same time, it's allowed us to attract more students into our computer science program. They're getting a lot of experience now in artificial intelligence and chatbots and machine learning, but also in working with programs. This has spun off into a whole new area for us at the university, and it's dramatically improved the numbers in our computer science program.
I read, or you told me in a prior conversation, something about the app helping people with, I think you said, kidney disease and how they could have conversations.
Yeah, we've also, in part of our computer science program, we're doing a lot of work with natural language processing, which is a machine learning on language and what have you. And so we've been involved with medical research, looking at how patients describe their kidney disease to a doctor, and then analyze that and getting a better sense about what's the phraseology, which could indicate something happening that may not be picked up right away when they're talking to their physician. And so we're applying natural language processing to technology as well to help improve its success.
Okay, I asked if there was anything I missed, and you pretty well nailed it there.
That I've done a few hundred podcasts, but since 2004, I've had over 1,000 interviews.
Don't ever forget that this is the only one you've had up here on the tributary of a river into Lake Michigan. This is it.
I will not forget that, Patrick.
Good. Other, concluding, I guess a couple things here. Number one, you do have a specialization and a great affection for bees.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll be going off to Thessalonica, Greece, in a few weeks to do some research. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm a historian of beekeeping, and so I'm now working on a third book on beekeeping. And as a sidebar, I forgot to mention, if people want to learn more about what's going on with the emergence this year, my new book, A Tale of Two Broods, the 2024 Emergence of Periodical Cicada Broods 13 and 19, published by the Ohio Biological Survey, is now available. A few years ago, a colleague of mine, Dr. Bruce Knoll, who's a specialist in poetry in New Mexico, and Jesse Smith, and I came out with a ebook titled The Poet's Guide to the Orders of Insects, and it's a collection of poems covering every known order of insects. All proceeds for that title go to support scholarship monies for students attending the National Meeting of the Entomological Society of America.
I hope you'll be kind enough to come back on, have a conversation at some time in the future about your trip to Greece and about the larger subject of the bees.
Oh, sure. That'd be a lot of fun. This is my fourth trip to Greece, and bees have been involved in every single one of them.
Okay, well, I think that's a wrap. Okay. Thanks, Doc.
Thanks. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Patrick. A good afternoon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now. So there is a link, and please do consider supporting the show. So if you think the episodes are of quality and informational, of some value to you, please do consider supporting the show. Thank you.